Chapter 10. Zerg urban tactics, Wist had long ago discovered, were amazingly predictable. They always waited around a corner, then charged in madly with whatever numbers the overlord or queen or whatever figured would be needed. He'd been prepared at the blind spot around the first landing. Nothing. Too obvious, maybe. Or else whatever was causing the brain buzzing wanted to work on defocusing the team a little longer. Didn't matter, really, because he was just as prepared at the second landing, where the expected attack was actually launched. There were four Zerg, charging silently down the third ramp toward them. Each was about the size of a large dog, a bit smaller than a Zergling, but with more of the arched cobra look of a Hydralisk. They were the usual collection of angles, fangs, and claws that marked all Zerg variants, though there were subtle differences in the specific layout of the killing components. What was strikingly different was their coloration. Instead of the usual dark brown that characterized most Zerg, these were light brown, with red highlights on their legs and claws, and with triple lines of bright red spots starting between their eyes and running all the way up their skulls and then down the centers of their backs. It was a color scheme he'd never seen before, especially the red dot thing. Definitely something new that Sagara had put together for whatever the hell scheme she was spinning. He raised his C-14, setting his teeth against the suddenly violent level of buzzing in his brain. The buzzing was apparently the second part of Zagara's new 1-2 punch. Let her try. Wist had been hit by fatigue, hunger, dehydration, smoke, desertion, ridiculous odds, and the whole general haze of war. He'd gotten through all of them, and he and Tanya would get through this one too. What he wasn't prepared for was Tanya suddenly collapsing on the ramp behind him. He had about a quarter second to wonder what the hell had happened and to realize he'd just lost 50% of his firepower. And then it was too late to do anything but start shooting. For the first few seconds, he thought he could stay on top of it. His first burst caught the lead Zerg squarely in the torso, just beneath the gaping mouth, knocking it back and reducing its charge to a limping crawl. Either these things were a lot wimpier than they looked, or else he'd had the luck to nail a weak spot. He lined up his C-14 on the next Zerg, blinking as his vision suddenly blurred and wavered. It was at that moment that he knew he was going to die. He could barely focus on the second target, and without clear vision, he couldn't hope to hit that sweet spot again. Even if he was lucky enough to do so, there were two more Zerg behind it. He would die, and then Ulavu would die, and then Tanya would die, probably still flat on her back. Diz and Aaron would be next, attacked from behind without warning because they were concentrating on the threat outside and were counting on Wist and Tanya to guard their backs. They were all going to die, and no one would ever know what happened. The psi block that had been so brilliantly installed in his armor kept him from shouting out a warning to Crookshank about Zagara's betrayal. But he could at least use the short-range comm to warn Diz and Aaron before he died. Strange that he hadn't thought of doing that until just this second. Was mental slowness part of the physical confusion from all the buzzing in his mind? No matter. The buzzing would be over soon. He squeezed off a burst into the second Zerg, the impact flipping it over on its back. At least that was how it looked. His vision was so blurry now that he couldn't be sure. He blinked at the two remaining blobs coming toward him, trying to line up his C-14 on one of them. And then, to his shock and bewilderment, a figure brushed past from behind, gently but firmly pushing the barrel of his Gauss rifle to the side. His first thought was that Tanya had somehow awakened from her sudden faint. His second thought was that Diz had magically divined what was happening and had managed to get here in the nick of time. He blinked twice and shook his head, the movement briefly unfogging his vision. The figure wasn't Tanya or Diz. It was just Ulavu, striding forward with his arms stretched out to the front and sides, as if he were offering the attacking Zerg a friendly bear hug. The Protoss's hands knotted into fists, his thick gardening gloves stretching and splitting open across the backs. The gloves fell off, revealing thinner gloves beneath them with complex metal patterns attached to the outer wrists. Even before the gloves hit the ground, the metal patterns were in motion, popping up, unfolding, and reconfiguring themselves into flattened cylinders. They weren't like anything Whist had ever seen before, and yet somehow disturbingly familiar. He had just enough time to feel his mouth drop open when the cylinders erupted with an incandescent green flame of warp blades. Ulavu wasn't some useless civilian scholar and researcher. He was a Dark Templar. The two remaining Zerg might have tried to scramble to a stop as they recognized their new and unexpected enemy. But if that was their intent, they failed. The first Zerg's momentum took it straight into the weapons, impaling itself on the shimmering blades as its body slammed into Ulavu's fists. Ulavu staggered slightly with the impact, but by the time the second Zerg hurled itself at him, he'd recovered enough balance to neatly sidestep the arcing leap and slash a horizontal slice through the Zerg's entire body, gutting it from chest to tail. And as the buzzing abruptly stopped to barely background level, Whist realized it was over. Or maybe, he amended soberly, it had just begun. Ulavu took a moment to survey his handiwork, probably making sure both his targets were dead. He crossed in turn to each of the two Whist had wounded and made sure they also wouldn't cause any further trouble. Then, almost reluctantly, he turned back to face Whist. "Do not be alarmed," the Protoss's voice came in Whist's head as the warp blades vanished. "I am indeed your ally. I ask that you do not reveal my secret to the others." Whist took a careful breath. "Why not?" he forced the thought. Cursing, he keyed off his comm and opened his visor. Some people could do this thought-to-thought communication with Protoss, but with his brain still spinning from the buzzing, it was way too much effort. "Why not?" he repeated aloud. Ulavu's eyes flicked past Whist to Tanya. "I have deceived her these many years," he said, sounding almost embarrassed. That was a new one for the books, at least in Whist's experience. Protoss never got embarrassed. "She will be hurt and dismayed to learn the truth." "You think?" Whist shot back as sarcastically as he could manage. "What the hell's going on? Who are you anyway?"
"I am Ulavu," the Protoss said. "I am a researcher. But I am also more."
"Something more as in a Dark Templar?" Whist growled. His throbbing brain made a connection to that previous conversation. "Yeah, cute. Diz only asked about psi blades. The weapons you guys use are called warp blades, completely different."
"They are," Ulavu said.
"Not in practice," Whist said. "Fine, whatever. Nice to know Protoss can split hairs too."
"I did not wish to lie. I spoke truth without revealing my identity."
"Yeah. Well, it's all academic anyway because your bubble's about to go poof." Whist gestured to the four Zerg carcasses. "Unless you've got a clever way to explain away warp blade wounds." In answer, Ulavu reached over and plucked a grenade from Whist's belt.
"This will eradicate all traces."
The Protoss started to pull his arm away. Whist caught his wrist, vaguely aware that if Ulavu activated that particular warp blade again, he'd finish his life with the nickname Lefty. "Hold it," he warned. "Not saying I don't appreciate having some extra muscle along, God knows we can use it. But if you want me to play ball on this secret identity stuff, I need to know why." Ulavu was silent a moment.
"Hierarch Artanis is uncertain how much he can trust Terrans," he said. "The Narazim are similarly ambivalent. We have all seen the viciousness of Terran combat and the disunity of the Terran race."
"Yeah, you Protoss should talk," Whist growled. "So what? Artanis sent you to spy on us?"
"He sent me to observe," Ulavu corrected. More hair splitting. "He wished to know whether Terran unity could be achieved. and whether conflict among you could be eliminated. Of equal importance, he wished to know if the ferocity you had demonstrated in battle would now be turned against the Protoss.
This may come as news to a born and bred warrior, Wist said, but we Terrans are pretty damn sick of war right now. Even if we weren't, we're not crazy enough to launch one against you. Trust me.
I do trust you, Sergeant Foster Cray, Ulavu said. But I was given a mission. I must complete it.
Wist scowled, trying to think. This conversation was a long way from being over. That much was for damn sure. But right now, they didn't have time for chit-chat. The fact that the buzzing was still going on, even though this batch of Zerg were dead, strongly implied that there were more little nasties lurking around somewhere. Fine, he said, releasing his grip on Ulavu's wrist. I'll try to keep your secret, but, he raised a warning finger, if we get in this deep again, you damn well better join in the fun. Clear?
Clear, Ulavu agreed. There was a subtle change in the tone of his thoughts, and Wist had the strangest sensation of an ironic smile. I can hardly complete my mission if I am dead.
Good. Remember that.
Wist nodded toward the carcasses.
Go ahead and mulch them. Make sure you're not standing too close.
Whatever else the Protoss military taught its Dark Templar, at least it gave them basic knowledge of Dominion weaponry. Ulavu positioned himself exactly half a meter out of primary blast range before tossing Wist's grenade into the Zerg dogpile.
Okay, Wist said as the echo of the blast faded away. Let's see if there's anything we can do for Tanya.
He knelt down beside her and flipped open her armor's bio display. I believe she was the main target for the attack, Ulavu said, crouching at Wist's side.
Really?
Wist said, looking sideways at him. He'd never seen a Protoss crouch. It looked strange with those back-jointed knees.
Well, it sure worked. She's out like a light.
He nodded toward Ulavu's forearms.
Those look new.
They are experimental, Ulavu said. He looked down at the warp blade focusers, and as Wist watched, they folded back into their flat forms. Not as powerful or sturdy as traditional focusers, but better for situations like this.
Like when you're playing things cool, Wist said.
Gently, he tapped Tanya's cheek.
Come on, kid. Wake up.
Ulavu leaned closer. Let me try. Can you remove her visor?
Sure.
Wist popped the catches and eased it off. Tanya's eyes were closed, but her face looked peaceful enough. He'd half expected to find a twisted expression of pain or terror.
She's all yours.
Thank you. Ulavu fell silent, his eyes focused on Tanya's face. There was a sound of footsteps behind them. Wist spun around on his knee, bringing up his C-14.
Whoa!
Diz called as he and Aaron came around the corner, his voice faint through Wist's helmet. It's just us!
You should have called ahead, Wist growled, lowering his muzzle.
We did, Diz said. Your comm's off.
Oh.
Making a face, Wist turned it back on.
I thought you were securing the entrance.
Oh, it's secured all right,
Diz assured him grimly, breaking into a jog as he spotted Tanya lying on the floor.
Whole ceiling came down in front of the gap. We're going to have to wreck some more trees to get out. What happened here?
Meet the brain bugs,
Wist said, gesturing to the mess that had once been the four Zerg.
The latest product of lying bitch Zagara Incorporated.
They got Tanya? With a sudden shuddering gasp, Tanya twitched and opened her eyes. Ulavu? I am here, Tanya Caulfield, the Protoss said, catching her armored hand and squeezing it. Somewhere along the line, Wist noted, he'd replaced the gardening gloves, once again concealing his gauntlets and their warp blade focusers. Are you all right? I think so. Tanya shifted her eyes to Wist, a pained expression creasing her face. I bailed on the fight, didn't I?
Don't worry about it, Wist assured her. A few shots, a grenade, and we got it done.
What are these things? Aaron asked. She had gone over to the carcasses and was kneeling beside them, fingering a piece of dorsal carapace. I've never seen a Zerg with this coloration.
Like I said, something new,
Whist said. We think they're what was causing the mental buzzing.
You mean the buzzing I can still hear? Diz asked.
Which means, yes, there must be more of them somewhere, Whist agreed.
Diz huffed out a breath. Terrific. Wait a minute, Aaron objected. This doesn't make any sense. Apart from group communication, the Zerg have never had psionic powers before. They've certainly never had projective psionics of any kind.
Aside from Kerrigan, Tanya said. Not sure that counts.
But how? Aaron persisted. That ability simply isn't in Zerg genetics.
Well, maybe they found some new genetics somewhere, Whist said. They're really good at doing that, you know.
At least that explains your fancy plant pattern, Diz commented. Gotta be connected somehow.
No, Aaron said. The pattern was in the plants. Psionic genetics only show up in animals. No, there's something else going on here.
So, let's get some answers, Whist said, squinting up the ramp. Got at least one ramp to go, and then whatever else is up there.
What about the brain bugs? Diz asked.
We find them. We kill them, Whist said.
Good, Diz said. Just checking. That's kind of a stupid name, you know.
You got something better?
No, but lucky for us, we have an expert on these things. Diz cocked an eyebrow at Aaron. Over to you, Doc.
Psiolisks, she said promptly. It fits both their profile and one of the standard Zerg naming conventions.
Diz looked at Whist. She's good, he said. Psiolisks it is.
He held a hand down to Tanya. You feel up to moving?
Sure.
Ignoring his proffered hand and Ulavu's, she got back to her feet.
Don't worry. This won't happen again.
Whist looked at Ulavu.
She is correct, the Protoss confirmed privately. Now that they know about me, I will undoubtedly be their primary target.
Whist turned away, pursing his lips. If they knew about him. With the Psyblocks humming away and all the witnesses to Ulavu's attack dead, they might not. He hoped not anyway. Given the choice, he'd take a functioning Dark Templar over a ghost of undefined power any day. Especially a Dark Templar the enemy didn't know about.
Let me know if you start going lightheaded again, Tanya, he said. That goes for all of you. Oh, and watch out. The buzzing can blur your vision. I think you'll be okay if you know it's coming and stay on top of it.
And if not, try a quick stim? Diz suggested.
Probably, Whist said. Aaron, did Crookshank show you how to do that?
Yes, Aaron said, her voice grim. I've also seen the list of stim side effects. I think I'll take my chances with the buzzing.
Suit yourself, Whist said. Okay, same marching order. Let's do this.
The ramp they were on turned out to be the last one. The landing at the top opened into a wide corridor that in turn led to an archway about 50 meters farther ahead. Beyond the archway was what looked like a cavern, but their angle didn't allow them to see very far into it. Oddly enough, especially given that they seemed more or less in the middle of the mesa, there was a surprising amount of dim light filtering in from somewhere. Diz noticed it too.
Wonder where that light's coming from, he commented as they all paused.
The spectrum is the same as the sunlight, Aaron said.
She had crouched down a couple of steps to the side and was poking at the rough floor with her finger.
No obvious source, so it's probably coming in via several conduits from the top or sides.
Never mind that, Tanya said. I assume we're going to check out that chamber up ahead?
We should,
Aaron said, still poking at the floor.
That's where the pattern we've been following starts.
Whist and Diz exchanged looks.
We doing magic now? Diz asked.
No, we're doing lichens, Aaron said. They show the same pattern as what we saw from orbit in the macroflora. The pattern definitely leads to that chamber.
She stood up.
Are we going?
In a minute, Whist said, frowning at the floor. He hadn't even noticed there were tiny plants down there. You keep talking about this plant pattern, but you've never said what it is. What is it? Some kind of giant arrow only people with science degrees can see?
It's a little more subtle than an arrow, Aaron said. It's... You know how if there's a place where the wind always comes from the same direction, the trees and bushes lean the other direction? It's sort of like that. The tree leaves, for one thing. Leaves usually have slightly different colors or textures on their tops and undersides. They're also turned mainly upward so as to catch the sunlight, but here, on Gist, there's an extra vector added in. The trees themselves are noticeably taller near the focal points, too, as if they received the most intense growth spurt. There are also indications in the tree branch arrangements, the symmetry of smaller shrubs.
Okay, fine, Whist interrupted. We'll take your word for it.
It's almost like a flow pattern, Aaron continued. Flow isn't really the right word, but it gives you a sense.
And you can see that in the lichens too? Tanya asked.
Yes, Aaron said.
What about you? Diz asked, gesturing to Olavu. You're the other researcher in this group. Does this make any sense to you?
I have not seen the pattern, Olavu conceded. But Dr. Aaron Weiland has greater expertise in such matters than I do, and patterns are often apparent only to those who know what to look for. I am willing to trust her judgment.
Fine, Whist said, trying to forget all the times he or one of his unit had thought they saw something in the rocks or bushes that turned out not to be there. Human eyes and brains were really good at finding patterns, whether they were there or not. Still, whatever was going on with the plants, the Psiolisks definitely needed to be checked out. The chamber up ahead was the next step. They might as well make it a clean sweep.
Usual order, and stay sharp. If the buzzing gets louder for anyone, for God's sake, say something.
You think we ought to call this in first? Tanya asked. Just in case?
You mean turn off the psi blocks? Diz asked pointedly.
Why not? Tanya countered. They don't seem to be doing a lot of good in here.
We don't know that, Diz said. Actually, the fact that Whist was able to take down 4 Psiolisks by himself strongly suggests that they're doing something to slow down the opposition.
Whist looked sideways at Olavu to find the Protoss gazing back at him. He wasn't saying anything, but the reminder of Whist's promise lay heavy in the air.
Or they're just weaker than the average Zerg. A grenade wouldn't have done that much damage against even a single Zergling.
Enough, Whist interrupted. The psi blocks stay on. Discussion over.
He looked at Tanya, who clearly had more to say.
Discussion over, he repeated flatly.
She wrinkled her nose, but turned away without comment.
Okay, he said, hefting his C-14 and touching his elbow to his spare mags in his belt, just to make sure they were there. Let's go.
Chapter 11. The corridor, Tanya quickly discovered, wasn't nearly as smooth-walled as it had looked from the top of the ramp. It had indentations, some of them large enough for a small Zerg, others extending far enough back that Whist had to shine a light into them to make sure they were empty. It made for slow and rather nerve-wracking progress. But wherever the rest of the Psiolisks were hiding, they apparently had decided not to bother with piecemeal ambush. Nothing attacked or even showed itself. But the buzzing in her brain was definitely getting louder. Whatever Zagara had planned, she was a long way from being finished. And that plan could get horrific in a hurry. During the war, Sarah Kerrigan had been trapped by the Overmind and absorbed into the swarm. If Zagara had something similar in mind for Tanya, she shook her head firmly. It was not going to come to that. Absolutely and positively not. Whatever happened, whatever it took, she would make sure she died before the Zerg turned her into something horrible, like the Queen of Blades. Finally, they reached the archway.
Here we go, Whist murmured. Stay sharp.
How do you feel?
Ulavu's thought came to Tanya through the buzzing.
I'm fine, she replied, frowning.
He was trying to hide it, but she could sense an unusual level of pain in his tone.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, he assured her. But if I should fall unconscious, I would appreciate your pledge that you will protect me.
Absolutely, she promised,
a knot forming in her gut. He hadn't asked anything like that in any of the other battles or near battles the team had faced at this point. Was there something different about this situation? Something he knew about and she didn't? Maybe it wasn't as different as she thought. Maybe after she'd blacked out back on the ramp, he'd blacked out too. Of course, if they were both blacked out, there wouldn't be a lot she could do to protect him, which just meant she had damn better stay on her feet this time. And she would. The last time, she'd been taken by surprise. Now that she knew what to expect, she was confident she could fight off the effects. And if not, there were always the stems Diz had suggested. The chamber was much larger than the entryway cave, 3 ramps below them. 100 meters straight ahead, built into the far wall, was a 3-tiered Zerg-style structure with 60 milky white pods nestled into the curves and textured material. The pods were ovate, roughly 1 meter long, with a translucent outer skin. Something was inside each one, but even with the vision enhancements in Tanya's visor, she couldn't make out any details. The support structure itself was unlike anything she'd ever seen, though it shared some of the characteristic features of Zerg spawning pools and evolution chambers. And perhaps of the structure that housed the chrysalis the Overmind had used to imprison Kerrigan during her forced transformation. "Well," she commented, keeping her voice level, "that's new."
"Yeah," Wist said tightly. "And that's not."
Tanya turned her attention from the pods. The sides of the chamber were 50 meters away in both directions. Lined up against both walls were more Sialisks. At least 20 on each side, all of them just standing silently. And as her stomach knotted up, she felt the buzzing in her brain get louder.
"Wist," Diz murmured. "What are we waiting for?"
"Easy," Wist cautioned. "They're up to something."
"All the more reason to start evening up the numbers right now," Diz insisted.
"Maybe they're just waiting to see if we're interested in those pods," Aaron offered. "Any idea what those are?"
"Never seen them before," Wist said. "Course, we haven't seen Sialisks before either, so we left known territory a long time ago."
"Some new kind of spawning pool or evolution chamber, I'm guessing," Tanya said, studying the Sialisks. She hadn't had a chance to try anything on the last batch, and Wist's grenade had messed up the carcasses too much for her to look for weak spots. But they looked a lot like scaled-down Hydralisks. If they shared the same organ layout as well, she should be able to take them.
"They may be waiting for us to move away from the tunnel," Ulavu suggested.
"Away from a quick exit and without a wall to put our backs to," Wist said grimly. "Sure, that makes sense."
"Are we leaving then?" Aaron asked. Wist snorted.
"Like hell. We were given a mission, Doc, which seems to have come down to taking a look at those damn pods. So, we take a look at the damn pods."
"Then we get the hell out?"
Diz suggested. "Probably."
Wist looked back at Aaron.
"Doesn't mean we have to drag you into the middle of it. You could stay back here where you can make a run for it if the Sialisks decide they don't want us poking around the pods."
Tanya frowned. Now that Wist mentioned it, what were the Sialisks doing all the way at the sides of the room? If they were trying to guard the pods, shouldn't they have formed their lines across the team's path?
"Oh, absolutely," Aaron said sourly. "Alone and unarmed? Thanks, but I'll take my chances with the rest of you."
"You didn't have to be unarmed, you know," Wist pointed out. "You passed right by the rack of C-14s on your way out of the dropship."
"None of which I know how to use," Aaron said. "I barely got 5 minutes of instruction."
"Great. That puts you ahead of most Marine recruits," Wist said.
He unslung his spare Gauss rifle from his shoulder and handed it over.
"Here. Already set for semi-auto. Flip off the safety, thumb lever just over the mag release, then point and shoot. Try not to hit any of us."
"And hold on to this for me while you're at it,"
Tanya added, unslinging her C-10 and offering it to Aaron.
"Whoa, whoa," Wist said. "We're disarming ourselves in the face of the enemy now, are we?"
"We're thinking this through," Tanya corrected, pointing to the lines of Zerg. Look at them. There's nothing on either wall that looks interesting, so they must be here to guard the pods. So why are they standing there instead of right in front of us?
Because... Whist broke off. Aha! Because they don't want stray shots hitting the pods.
That's what I'm thinking, Tanya agreed. I'm also thinking that if I head over there unarmed, they might just let me get away with it. Because if they charge toward you, they'll eventually end up putting themselves between the rest of us and the pods, Diz murmured. Interesting. You may be right. And if I am, the trick is to look as harmless as possible, Tanya concluded. Aaron? Reluctantly, Aaron accepted the rifle. Be careful. I will, Tanya promised. She stepped forward, then stopped as Whist caught her upper arm.
You're just looking harmless, right? He asked in a low voice.
Tanya nodded. I'll be okay.
Because Zerg have ways of messing with people's minds, Whist went on. Usually by infesting their target. Seen way too much of that, and it's not pretty. I'm thinking these Sciolisks might be a try at bypassing the meat part of the infestation and going straight for the brain.
And you think I might have been taken over? Tanya asked, a shiver running up her back. If something like that had happened, she would surely know it. Wouldn't she? In that case, shouldn't I have kept my weapon so they could make me fight the rest of you?
Maybe. Or maybe they first want to see how far they can mess with you.
Tanya looked at the silent lines of Zerg, consciously unclenching her teeth. Tell you what, she said. I'm going to look at the pods. If I die really stupidly, I'll concede you may have a case. If not, we'll assume I'm still in my right mind. Deal?
Deal. He released her arm. Be careful.
Right. She looked back at Olavu. Watch yourself, Olavu, she said. If they attack, stay behind Whist or Diz. I will be fine, he assured her, a strange darkness in his mental tone that she couldn't remember ever sensing before. Be safe.
She gave him a reassuring smile. Then, fighting back her misgivings, she started walking.
100 meters, her rangefinder had put it. But now that Tanya was walking alone, with her C-10 at an ever-increasing distance behind her, the pod seemed a hell of a lot farther than that. She kept an eye on both lines of Sciolisks as she walked, wondering if and when they would decide she'd gotten too close. She was 30 meters away and looking to her right when she apparently tripped their invisible line.
Left! Whist snapped. She spun her head in that direction, even as the background buzz suddenly became a raucous hammering in her brain.
The Zerg were on the move, the whole line easing forward as if someone was choreographing them. They weren't charging yet, but rather slithering ahead at the pace of a fast jog. Maybe they were waiting to see what she would do, or seeing if they could knock her out again. Or maybe waiting to see how solid a mental hold they had on her. If that was it, they were going to be sorely disappointed. Stretching out with her mind, fighting against the buzz, she focused on the nearest Sciolisk, visualizing the part of its anatomy where the heart lung cluster should be. With a violent spasm, the Zerg reared up and toppled over on its side. Tanya didn't wait to see it flop to the floor, but shifted her attention and her power to the next Zerg in line. From her left, the chamber erupted in stuttering thunder as Whist and Diz opened up with their Gauss weapons. Her second target collapsed, and she shifted to the next. This attack was a little off-center, and the Sciolisk's side erupted in a burst of black-laced yellow flame. Scowling, she blinked against the buzzing and focused again, and this time, it went down. Others were going down alongside it, and she took a second to check the other side. The Zerg back there were falling as well. A quick look at her comrades showed Diz and Whist standing back to back, their weapons blasting away, with Aaron and Olavu back to back beside them. Aaron was shooting more tentatively than the soldiers, but seemed to be holding her own, while Olavu was mainly hunched over, trying to stay out of everyone's way. Tanya fried 2 more Zerg on the right side, then shifted back to the left. The attack front had diminished significantly, but there were still plenty of Sciolisks charging doggedly toward her.
and they were getting closer. She fried one, then another, watching as more fell to Wist's Goss rifle bursts. The familiar red haze had settled across her vision, rage and determination and bloodlust from her power, pain and disorientation from the brain buzz. She fought on, killing and killing and killing. And suddenly, it was over. Slowly, the haze faded. Tanya realized she was panting, her skin under her armor wet with perspiration. The buzzing was gone, too. Not just diminished, but completely gone. She looked around her, noting the scattered Zerg carcasses. Then, almost afraid of what she would see, she turned back toward her teammates. To her relief, all four were still on their feet, with all their extremities still attached in the original places. Wist's and Diz's armor looked as if they'd been through a mulcher, with multiple slices and punctures from Sciolisk claws. Apparently, the enemy attack wave had made it right up to their doorsteps. But there was no evidence of leaking blood or emergency suit lockdowns, which implied that none of the claws had made it all the way through to the soft Terran flesh inside. She hadn't checked her own armor, but it probably looked just as bad. Certainly, she had vague memories of Sciolisks getting up into her face before she or one of the others nailed them. "Everyone all right?" she called. Her answer was a tense silence and three wide-eyed stares. "Are you all right?" she repeated.
"Oh, my God," Aaron breathed.
She was standing beside Ulavu, the Goss rifle sagging in her grip.
"You're a..."
she trailed off, pointing. Tanya looked at the line of Zerg carcasses. Apparently, she'd been off target with more than just that one early attack. No fewer than four of the carcasses were smoldering, with one of them showing little tongues of smoke-laced yellow flame still dancing around the open wound.
"The proper term is pyrokete,"
Ulavu said. Diz cocked an eyebrow.
"Pyrokete?"
"That's just what they called me at the academy," Tanya said, grimacing as she walked back to them. So much for the Dominion's best-kept secret. "It was mostly a joke."
"I don't know," Diz said thoughtfully. "Kinda suits you."
"Do you speak an insult?" Ulavu demanded.
"It's all right, Ulavu," Tanya said quickly.
The last thing she wanted was an argument on her behalf, especially over something as silly as the stupid nickname her fellow ghosts had given her.
"Yeah, no offense," Diz snorted out a sort of laugh.
"Wow.
Something funny?"
Wist asked, his voice ominous. Apparently, he didn't want any arguments either.
No, not at all, Diz said. "It's just really great to have you aboard."
"Thanks," Tanya looked back at Aaron, searching for a way to change the subject. "You seem to have come out of it all right. Nice going."
"Thank you,"
Aaron said, blinking at the Goss rifle in her hands, as if suddenly remembering she was still holding it.
"But don't give me any credit because I was lousy. It's luck they mostly left me alone. They were hitting you and Wist and Diz pretty hard. Oh, and here's your gun."
Still cradling the Goss rifle, she unslung Tanya's C-10 and handed it over.
"If you, you know, really need it."
"Options are always good to have," Tanya said, frowning as she took the rifle and slung it back on her shoulder.
"They left you alone? Really?"
"Well, mostly, like I said,"
Aaron said. Her voice had picked up a small tremble, Tanya noticed. The fading adrenaline of the battle's aftermath.
"I was mostly hitting what I was shooting at, I think. At least, after the first couple of rounds. I couldn't have kept them all back, though, without Diz's help."
"A protection that Sergeant Foster Cray graciously offered me as well," Ulavu said.
"I'm glad," Aaron said. "I was worried about what would happen to you. I couldn't even take the time to see where you were or what you were doing."
"Yeah, well, between Tanya and me, we held down our side of the room okay," Wist said, an oddly gruff edge to his voice. "Anyway, kudos on your first battle, Aaron. Consider yourself graduated from recruit-level competence to officer-level."
"Present company accepted, of course,"
Tanya said, nodding to Diz.
It was probably just as well Aaron hadn't been able to look behind her, because the Siolisks had gotten perilously close to Ulavu. There were a handful of carcasses near where the two of them had been standing, close enough that it must have taken some impressive shooting by Whist to take them down in time. Anyway, shall we go see what all the fuss was about?
What, you think we haven't all figured it out? Whist said with his voice tight. But sure, let's go take a look.
The walk across the cavern was much quieter this time. With the mental buzzing gone, even their echoing footsteps seemed extra loud. And in the end, they did indeed find what everyone was probably thinking.
There,
Whist said, pointing through the translucent dome on one of the pods.
Right there, where it's close to the surface. Same red three-line dorsal dotting.
Tanya nodded silently. The creature was moving slightly inside what they now could see was some kind of fluid, and when one of its limbs drifted close to the surface, they could see it had the same red highlighted light brown outer shell as the Siolisks.
Only they're smaller, Aaron murmured. They're babies.
Who grow up to be those, Diz said, jerking a thumb over his shoulder, so don't go all maternal on us.
I'm not going maternal, Aaron insisted stiffly. I'm just saying there's a difference between killing them in here and killing them out there.
Sure is, Diz agreed. Out there, they try to kill you back. So we take them out? We take them out, Whist confirmed. And then we call Crookshank, tell him what Zagar is up to, and let the fleet take care of it while we get the hell off this rock.
If you expect the fleet and Emperor Valerian Minx to destroy this place, why do we need to do so ourselves?
Ulavu asked.
Call it insurance, Whist said, eyeing him closely. Why? You feeling all maternal or something?
Whist, he's just a...
Tanya began. Whist cut her off with a gesture.
I asked if you had a problem.
Not with the decision, but with the execution, Ulavu said. I question our ability to destroy this many pods with the resources available.
Whist pursed his lips.
Diz, what's your ammo look like?
I'm on my last mag, Diz said. He's got a point. That pod material's pretty thick. It may take a couple of shots per.
Whist looked at Tanya.
How about you?
Tanya wrinkled her nose.
It would be a stretch, she said. If I use my power too much, it takes time to regenerate.
We do not want her helpless, Ulavo said firmly.
Absolutely not, Whist agreed. For a moment, the Marine and the Protoss locked eyes.
Tanya frowned, wondering what was going on. But then Whist simply turned away.
I guess we'll have to leave them to the fleet then, he said. Let's get outside. We probably won't get a good transmission in here.
Whoa, whoa, Diz said. I just said I was low on ammo. We've still got options.
Such as?
We've got grenades, we've got dead Zerg bodies, and we've got fire,
Diz grinned suddenly.
You wondered why I laughed earlier when we found out about Tanya? It was the irony of it all.
What irony? Aaron asked.
The fact that we've got a fancy ghost who gets praise and comfy beds because of what she can do.
Diz looked at Whist.
You've been trying ever since we met to figure out what crime I committed that got me tossed into the Reaper Corps. The irony? I was, well, let's just say I was the old-fashioned type of pyrokeet. I just used gadgets and liquids instead of brainwaves.
You're kidding, Aaron said, sounding stunned. You were an...
Yep, Diz said, a slight edge of bitterness in his tone. Just like Tanya. Only I didn't get any medals for it. I got put in the Reapers.
There was a moment of awkward silence.
Okay, Whist said at last. So what do we do?
We start by lining up the carcasses along the edge, Diz said.
The brief hint of bitterness had vanished, Tanya noted, and he was all business again. A man doing what he loved.
Zerg actually burned quite well, and quite hot, with the right encouragement and the proper catalysts.
Do I want to know how you figured that out? Whist asked.
Probably not, Diz said. But didn't you ever wonder why Protoss took out Zerg-infested planets by burning them off instead of using tectonics or sunset viruses? It's because once a bunch of Zerg gets hot enough to burn, I mean really burn, the fire becomes self-sustaining, way more efficient than blasting fault lines.
Kind of hard on the surrounding landscape, though, Tanya pointed out.
Extremely hard on the landscape, Diz agreed. In here, though, should be fine.
He looked at the pods, tapping his finger thoughtfully against his lips.
Some of the tree branches from the entrance would probably be useful, too. Maybe grab whatever broken ones are down there.
Or break new ones, Wist said, pulling out his combat knife. Ulavu, you heard the man. Go get some branches.
As you request, Ulavu said. He hesitated a moment, then took the knife and headed back across the chamber.
Shouldn't someone go with him?
Tanya asked, frowning at the Protoss's back.
He'll be fine, Wist said shortly. Now what?
We make up some of that catalytic encouragement I mentioned, Diz said. Starting by taking apart a few grenades and switching them from boom to sizzle. I'll do that. The rest of you get busy hauling carcasses.
Tanya carried the still smoldering ones first, on the grounds that if anyone should get fetid smoke in their face, it was her. Then, while Wist and Aaron continued clearing out the Zerg from the main charge, she headed over for the ones near where Ulavu had been standing. There were five of them, she discovered as she sorted them out, two of them lying practically on top of each other. That must have been a particularly tricky shot, and she wondered briefly how Wist had managed it. She took the two carcasses by the base of their claws, making sure not to grab the claws themselves, and started to pull them across the rough floor. She paused. Pulling on their limbs that way exposed their torsos and the rib cage-like outer bone structure. Right in the center, just to the side of the layered sternum, was a gaping wound. Not a puncture wound like a Gauss rifle spike would leave, but a slash like from a wide-bladed knife. And both carcasses had the exact same wound. She frowned, leaning forward for a closer look. A knife wound, definitely. But who in the Dominion made knives that could cut through Zerg bone in a single thrust? Had someone come up with something new since the war ended? She looked over at Wist hauling carcasses, and Diz, carefully turning grenades inside out. Both men had field knives. Well, Diz did. Wist had given his to Ulavu to cut tree branches. But those weapons didn't have blades that were wide enough to make this kind of wound. Some new breed of vibrating or chain-cut blade, maybe? A vibroblade could theoretically make the wound look wider as it dug through Zerg bone. But even if something like that existed, the weapon at Diz's waist didn't have nearly the size and bulk that would be needed to house that kind of mechanism, not to mention the necessary power supply. Neither had the knife Wist had given to Ulavu. Could one of the Gauss bolts have somehow picked up a spin halfway to the target? No, that was even more unlikely than a vibroblade she'd somehow failed to hear about. Not only would that probably have wrecked whatever gun it had been fired from, but it typically took half a dozen bolts to break through Zerg bone armor, even when they were going straight and delivered all their momentum and kinetic energy to a single 50 square millimeter spot. A spinning bolt would almost certainly just bounce off instead of cutting through the bone like a Protoss psi blade. She stared at the wound, a sudden icy feeling wrapping around her heart. No, it wasn't possible. It couldn't be possible. But there was no other explanation. Nothing else that made sense. Ulavu was a Templar. A hard, cold, exquisitely deadly Protoss warrior who had been hanging out in the Ghost program masquerading as a harmless researcher, pretending to be Tanya's friend.
Tanya, Wist called. Trouble?
Tanya blinked away sudden tears. No trouble, she called back. Straightening up, she started pulling the carcasses across to where the others were working, feeling her heart crumbling within her. She'd thought Ulavu was her friend. She'd wrapped herself in that relationship, even when he went off and did crazy things like that midnight visit to Dante's Circle All of her thoughts and responses had been predicated on the certain knowledge that he would also be there for her if the situation were reversed. She had his back and he had hers. Only he didn't, and probably never had. He'd lied to Commandant Schmidt about who he was. He lied to the rest of the ghosts. There was no reason to think he hadn't lied to Tanya, too. She looked at each of the others as she walked mechanically across the room. Did everyone else on the team already know? Had Ulavu revealed his true identity in battle? Aaron's back had been to him, but Whist might have seen him in action. Or maybe Ulavu had told all of them. Maybe they were all secretly amused by Tanya's naive ignorance. She could ask them, but she didn't dare. Besides, whether they knew or not didn't really matter. She had something special. Now, she didn't. She'd never had friends, not really. As a child, she'd blamed it on her power and people's fear of it. Later, at the Ghost Academy, she'd blamed it on the implant they'd put into her brain and the way it sometimes messed with her mind and emotions. During the war, she'd blamed it on the stresses of combat that were tearing at the whole of Terran society. After the war, she'd blamed it on people's PTSD or the struggle to adjust to peacetime life. But it was none of those. She knew that now. It was her. She could get along with people for a while, but sooner or later, usually just when everything was going smoothly, she would say something wrong or do something wrong, and they would be gone, never to return. Ulavu had been the sole exception. Unlike any of her fellow Terrans, he had always been there, always willing to forgive an unintended slight or an unexpected outburst. He'd been her rock, her anchor, her friend. Only now, she knew it had all been a lie. So let Whist know. What did she care? Let Aaron know, and Diz, and Emperor Valerian, and the whole damn Dominion if it came to that. She didn't care. Nothing mattered anymore. For that matter, there was really no reason for Diz to fiddle with those grenades. Tanya could just as easily stand over the pods and ignite everything, taking the whole place down in a sort of old Earth Viking funeral pyre. The mission was over. There was no reason not to go out right here and now and put an end to her misery. She clenched her teeth. No. This part of the mission was over, but Aaron had said there were two other focal points. Valerian might decide to nuke the planet from orbit, but he might also decide that a more surgical strike was needed, a strike that might include their team. Ulavu had forfeited her trust and her loyalty, but Whist and the others hadn't, not even if they were all secretly laughing behind her back. She would stay with them. She would do whatever was necessary to complete the mission. She owed the Dominion that much for the time and effort it had put into her over the years. But if it came down to the need for someone to make the ultimate sacrifice, as had happened with so many missions during the war, well, at least Whist wouldn't have to send out a call for volunteers. Ulavu returned with more branches than he should have been able to scavenge or even to cut with Whist's knife. Tanya pretended not to notice. At one point, the Protoss inquired about her health and her strength. She answered him civilly, burying her anger and her anguish deep where he wouldn't see them. And when the preparations were finished, she watched with the others from the end of the tunnel, with malevolent satisfaction, as the pods and Zerg carcasses consumed themselves in white, hot flame. It took their last three grenades to blow open a new path through the tree palisade blocking the cavern entrance. Fortunately, the group of Zerg that had driven them inside earlier was nowhere to be seen. "What now?" Aaron asked.
"Diz goes and gets the dropship," Whist said. "Once he's on the way, I'll turn off my psi block and call in our report."
"Okay," Aaron shivered. "I just hope turning it off doesn't bring a new batch."
"If it does, we kill them," Tanya said calmly.
Whist threw her an odd look but nodded.
"Exactly," he said. "Hit the sky, Diz. The sooner we're out of here, the better."
Chapter 12.
Midway through Valerian's presentation of the survey team's report, Abathur's arms had started twitching. By the time he reached the part about the pods, the Evolution Master's clawed hands were working as if he were trying to strangle an invisible opponent. And by the time he finished,
"Terran organisms destroyed Adastra," Abathur snarled. "Terran organisms destroyed Adastra. Work of Abathur's hands. Future of Swarm. Burned to ash."
"The team was attacked," Valerian said, watching Zagara out of the corner of his eye. So far, the Overqueen hadn't spoken, nor had she moved a muscle. But throughout his report, Valerian had felt an ever-deepening sense of danger and foreboding from her. And right now, she looked as alien as any Zerg had ever looked.
"Impossible," Abathur bit out. "Adastra harmless, dreaming, cannot attack."
"I'm not talking about the ones in the pods," Valerian said. "I'm talking about the other ones, the ones we're calling Silisks."
"And yet you destroyed the Adastra in their pods," Zagara said quietly.
A shiver ran up Valerian's back. Very alien. And very angry. Artanis, at least, wasn't moved so easily.
"You knew of these creatures," he said. "Yet you said nothing. Why?"
"You dare to ask that," Zagara countered. "After all your sentiment against the Swarm and against the Evolution Master's attempts to create and mold and extend life, you dare to ask why we would not trust you with the knowledge of the Adastra."
"So you admit you lied to us?"
"I allowed you to go anywhere, Emperor Valerian," Zagara said, ignoring Artanis's question. "You repaid that graciousness with wanton slaughter."
"It wasn't wanton, Overqueen," Valerian said. A movement caught his eye. A pair of ravagers had appeared just outside the entrance of the chamber. So far they hadn't entered, but it was clear they were ready to do so at a moment's notice. Artanis had noticed them too.
"Do you now bring a direct attack?" he demanded.
"Would I not be justified in doing so?" Zagara shot back. "You have attempted to destroy the future of the Zerg. Shall I have no right to fight back in the Swarm's defense?"
"The survey team was attacked," Artanis said.
"The Zerg you speak of do not exist," Zagara said. "Yet I do not attack. Despite deadly provocation, I stand ready to continue our discussion."
"But I do not."
Artanis stood and lifted his hand.
"We will leave now, and we will then deliver to you the penalty for your actions."
The High Templar and Dark Templar escort shifted positions, forming a cordon back to the shuttle. Zagara drew herself up, and Valerian sensed her making a supreme effort to rein in her anger.
"I ask you to reconsider, Hierarch Artanis," she said. "I ask most strongly and urgently. This conversation is vital to the future of our civilizations."
"I will hear nothing more."
Artanis turned to Valerian.
"Come, Emperor Valerian Mengsk.
It is time we leave this place."
Valerian hesitated. Artanis was undoubtedly right. In all of Zagara's talk about Zelnaga-influenced plants and grandiose plans for feeding starving Terrans, she'd never said a word about new Zerg strains. Yet they clearly existed. And it was absolutely certain that Zerg, with the kind of psionic abilities Sergeant Kray had described, could not be permitted to leave Gist. But there was something wrong here. Something that didn't make sense. Why would Zagara invite them to Gist and allow him to send a survey team anywhere on the planet, knowing full well what the team might run into? Not only might, but had. Even more telling, she'd known since the team's run-in with Zerg at the Balance Crossing that they were heading toward the Mesa. She'd suggested at the time that she thought the team would be moving on, but she hadn't explicitly said so. She certainly hadn't insisted on it. So why hadn't she? Why hadn't she made some excuse to Valerian and found a reason for him to withdraw the team or send it elsewhere?
Emperor Valerian Mengsk?
Emperor Valerian, one of Valerian's bodyguards murmured, his eyes on the waiting ravagers. Hierarch Artanis is right, we need to go. Valerian pursed his lips, trying to see through Zagara's armored skin and face and get to her soul. She was still angry, still agitated, yet she was making no move to stop her guests from leaving, unless that move wasn't going to come from in here. Signal the Hyperion, he murmured to the guard. See if there are Mutalisks or other Zerg heading in this direction.
Already done, Emperor, the guard said. Sensors show nothing in the air near us. The only large Zerg nearby is Mukov's Leviathan, the one we followed in from Kor Hall, and it's still on the ground.
Valerian chewed the inside of his cheek. Zagara's deepest secret had supposedly been laid bare, bringing her and the entire planet to the brink of annihilation. Yet she was doing nothing.
Emperor Valerian Mengsk!
Artanis repeated his call, this time with an edge of impatience. Valerian wanted to go. He and Artanis had been lied to, and the implied threat underlying their agreement to attend this meeting had to be carried out. Not following up on threats and promises was the worst thing a leader could do. But something was wrong. And if he didn't get to the bottom of it, he knew he would always look back on this moment and wonder what might have been.
Thank you, Hierarch Artanis, he said. But I'd like to stay a little longer. We need to offer Over Queen Zagara the chance to give us an explanation. We need offer her nothing, Artanis said flatly. We made an agreement. That agreement has been abrogated.
Perhaps, Valerian said. Nevertheless, I'm staying.
Then you do so alone, Artanis said. I take my leave.
Valerian nodded.
Understood.
He watched as Artanis strode into the shuttle, followed by his guards. The hatch was sealed, and a moment later the vehicle rose from the floor and disappeared through the cone and into the sky, the phoenixes rising as well in escort formation. And now, Valerian knew he was truly committed. He gestured to the Marine.
Call the Hyperion and have Admiral Horner send a dropship, he said.
And now, Over Queen, let us continue our discussion.
They're still ignoring our requests for information, Cruikshank growled. But whatever they're planning, they're serious as hell about it. Energy profiles indicate all their hangar bays are at full operation, probably prepping warp prisms. Best guess is that they're massing troops.
Plus sentries and whatever other gear they packed aboard. Admiral Horner agreed grimly. At least they're not going for a full burn-off.
Not yet anyway, sir, Cruikshank warned.
Horner could whistle in the dark all he wanted, but to anyone with half a brain, it was obvious what Artanis was up to. Sergeant Cray had reported Zerg with psionic powers, which as far as Cruikshank was concerned, already put Gist on the nuke it from orbit list. But rather than take the Terran's word for it, Artanis had apparently decided to send some Protoss down to check it out for themselves.
They may not have enough firepower assembled for a burn-off, he added. But I'll bet they're gearing up for it.
Probably, Horner said. They just better not try it until Emperor Valerian and our team are back.
Colonel,
the tech at the comm station called.
Sergeant Cray, sir.
Cruikshank nodded, keying his comm for relay. That was another thing. What in the hell was a sergeant doing making reports and acting like he was in charge instead of Lieutenant Halkman?
Cruikshank.
Sergeant Cray, sir, the Marine's voice came. Lieutenant Halkman's back with the dropship. Do you want us to return to the Hyperion?
Cruikshank wrinkled his nose. Horner could wish and hope and make as many private threats as he wanted, but the dirty fact was that if Artanis decided to burn off Gist while there were still Terrans on the surface, he would damn well do so, and there was nothing Horner or the Dominion could do about it. The Emperor was still in harm's way by his own decision. He could do that. And while Cruikshank didn't like it, he had zero say in the matter. Halkman and his team were different. Those four men and women were Cruikshank's responsibility, and he had no desire to leave them on that death trap planet a single tick longer than necessary. Still, while Valerian was down there, the survey team's presence might conceivably be necessary. Cruikshank wasn't sure how or why, but he'd seen enough situations where victory had hinged on a single person being in the right place at the right time.
"Negative," he said. "Remain where you are and await further orders, and leave the Psyblocks off unless you see Zerg on the way."
There might have been the slightest hesitation, but Kray's voice was solid enough.
"Yes, sir." "And watch yourselves," Cruikshank added. "Cruikshank, out."
He keyed off the comm, glaring at the Protoss gathering their forces for whatever the hell they were up to. Yes, sometimes the right person at the right place made all the difference. But more often than not, that person got killed right along with everyone else. He hoped that wouldn't be the case here, but he wouldn't bet money on it.
"You and Hierarch Artanis were correct about the Xel'Naga essence," Zagara said. "But I note to you that Abathur did not create the plans. He created the Adastra. The Adastra created the plans."
She was still angry. Valerian could tell. But at least she was talking. Maybe she was sincere. Maybe she simply knew this was her absolute last chance before fire began raining down on her and the swarm.
"The essence was something that we could not incorporate into plants, only into animal species."
"And so you created a species that could do that?"
"We modified one," Zagara corrected. "It was the Queen of Blades who pointed the way and encouraged us along the proper path. She identified a species that could be used, a non-violent, not fully sentient species. We took only those we needed, leaving the others on their planet in peace. Abathur then melded the Xel'Naga strands salvaged from Ulnar into them, and with his skill, we were able in the end to achieve her dream."
"Yes, the survey team saw the results of that dream," Valerian said grimly.
"No," Abathur bit out. "Impossible. Terran describes creatures do not exist."
"I do not say your soldiers are lying, Emperor Valerian," Zagara added. "But these are not the creatures of Abathur's hands who lie dreaming within their cocooning."
"Fine," Valerian said. So damn sincere. But Kray had been equally sincere in his report about what had just happened at Focal Point 1. Unfortunately, all Valerian had was Kray's word against Zagara's. The CMC recorders, which should have made a clear record of the battle, had apparently fallen victim to the same Psyblock-induced failure that was affecting the long-range comms. The audio had been completely scrambled, and all the video showed were vague blurs that could be anything.
"Tell me about these new creatures. What were they like? Or let's start with what they were supposed to be like."
"As was said, we call them Adastra," Zagara said. "We believe the word means dreamer in the language of the Xel'Naga. But their dreams are not like yours or mine. Their dreams reach deep into the psionic power of their species. They call out to life wherever it lies, whether in fields, in streams, or even deep within stone. That life is stirred and encouraged and nurtured until it is finally and fully awake."
"Wait a minute," Valerian said, frowning. "Are you saying Gist's new plant life is the result of some animals thinking or dreaming about it?"
"Animals whose very cores are composed of Xel'Naga essence," Zagara reminded him. "The legends speak of the Xel'Naga seeding the galaxy with life. Is it so hard to believe this ability was innate within them, and not something merely learned over millennia of study?"
Valerian rubbed his cheek. Certainly it fit with the Protoss' own legends of their interactions with the Xel'Naga. And the idea that Adastra dreams were responsible for Gist's explosion of life, however the hell that worked,
could also explain the pattern that Dr. Wyland had first spotted. Not a wind pattern, but simply the plants in some strange way reflecting the direction of their inspiration source.
So what went wrong? Did they go rogue somehow?
That cannot be what happened, Zagara insisted. The Adastra are not in any way hostile.
Are you sure?
Valerian countered, shifting his gaze to Abathur.
Did you watch everything Abathur did as he worked?
He was monitored at all times.
By Zerg, who knew as much about genetic manipulation as he did.
No such Zerg exist,
Abathur said with clear pride.
He is correct, Zagara said. But he is loyal to me.
Then maybe he made a mistake, Valerian suggested.
Could there have been some genetic time bomb in the Adastra that no one expected? Something that caused them to transform into Silisks?
Zagara tilted her head.
Yet what could cause such a transformation?
He's the evolution master,
Valerian said, gesturing to Abathur.
Ask him.
No,
Abathur said flatly.
No possibility. Far easier to believe Terrans are lying.
Valerian pursed his lips. Stalemate.
All right. Let's try it from another direction. You said all the brood mothers were loyal to you, Overqueen. Are you sure about that?
You refer to the attack on your survey team before the entrance into the Adastra cocooning structure.
Yes, Valerian said. According to Ulavu, they were well within the local broodmother's territory by then.
The broodmother insists she neither ordered nor condoned any such attack.
Let's assume she's right, Valerian said, wondering briefly just how truthful the broodmothers had to be to their overqueen, and whether Zagara would even know if they were lying. You said the Adastra had psionic powers. Could they have taken over the Zerg outside their cocoons and made them attack the survey team?
No, Zagara said. The Adastra are nonviolent. They would not have been part of an attack.
But it is possible.
No.
Valerian scowled. Again, stalemate.
All right, he said. What we need, what we're missing, are facts and evidence. Let me call the survey team and see if they can pull tissue samples from whatever's left in the cocooning area.
He'd had the sense that Zagara was finally letting go of some of her anger. Now the flow pattern reversed itself. The Overqueen's body stiffened, once again filling Valerian's senses with that stifling feeling of alienness. From the ashes of their own destruction. Which the team had deemed both necessary and prudent. But Valerian had no intention of bringing that up. It was easy to second-guess a commander's on-the-ground decision, especially when Zagara had been so furious and horrified to hear about the cocooning's destruction. But defending the decision, or even agreeing with Zagara's judgment, would again get them nowhere.
I'll call them now, he insisted. We've got a mystery here. Let's see if we can make a start at unraveling it.
Understood, Colonel, Diz said, his nose wrinkling a little.
Which was, Aaron suspected, not a good sign. Her experience with the Dominion military was admittedly sparse, but she was pretty sure junior officers were supposed to show more respect than that to their seniors. Given the circumstances, she suspected whatever orders Cruikshank was passing on, she wasn't going to like them. She was right.
Orders from the quote, highest level, unquote, Diz said sourly. By which I assume Cruikshank means Valerian himself. We need to go back inside and look.
We need to what?
Whist interrupted.
Go back inside and look for tissue samples, Diz finished. By which I mean pieces of the Silisks. By which I mean not a chance in hell.
Aaron felt her stomach tighten. Watching the funeral pyre Diz had set up had been bad enough, even though she knew the creatures had tried to kill them, even though she knew that Zerg at that level were little more than animals, it had felt eerie and primal and as uncivilized as anything she'd ever been a part of. Was this the sort of thing that happened in war? Probably.
She'd missed most of the uglier parts of the war years, safely ensconced in her lab with nothing but tissue samples, chemical samples, and occasionally partial carcasses to remind her of what was happening out there. Now, suddenly, she was getting all of it at once. The combat, the fear, the adrenaline rush, the carnage, and yes, the bitter-edged psychological aftermath of everything else. And now, they wanted her to dig tissue samples out of the ashes?
What's the problem? Tanya asked. Is it still too hot in there?
Oh, it's plenty hot, Diz assured her. My armor won't handle it. Too light and many open places. And you and Olavu are definitely out. But those CMC-400s are pretty good, even with the damage Wiss took. So he and Aaron should be fine. My point is that there isn't going to be anything left worth digging out.
I suppose we should at least try, Wiss said. He looked at Aaron and raised his eyebrows. You game?
Not really,
Aaron wanted to say. But he was right.
Sure,
she said, trying to put some heartiness into her voice.
We'll keep watch out here,
Diz said as the two of them headed toward the gap in the tree palisade.
If anything goes wrong, give us a holler. And what? You'll send Tanya in?
Wist asked pointedly.
Point. So just make sure nothing goes wrong. Right. Thanks for the tip.
You're welcome, Diz said.
And watch yourselves. Crookshank wants real time, so we need to leave the Psyblocks off.
Yeah, you watch yourselves, Wist said. All the Zerg in there are already dead. Not so much out here.
There was still a few pockets of fire blazing away where the pods had once been, but for the most part, the pyre had died down to smoke. Keeping one eye on Wist and the other on her footing, Aaron picked her way across the floor, glad that her air system kept her from having to smell any of it. They reached the pods to discover that, as Diz had predicted, there was very little left.
What a mess, Wist commented.
He leaned over the nearest pod, peering past the shattered top and into the bits of smoldering material inside.
How do you want to do this?
Aaron looked down the entire line of pods, or at least as many of them as she could see through the drifting smoke.
We go to each one and look for something that's not completely blackened.
And if we don't find anything?
I'll take a few samples of anything that's not ash, Aaron said.
Okay, he pointed to the top tier. I'll start up there, you start down here. We'll meet in the middle. Let's get this over with.
Swallowing her discomfort, Aaron got to work. The first 8 pods were identical to the one she'd looked into earlier. Bits of blackened flesh amid the broken debris of the chitin structure the pods had been encased in, all spattered with stains from whatever liquid had been inside. A little poking into the carbonized remains revealed occasional bones, the sight of which added an extra edge to her general queasiness. She was about to suggest to Wist that they just give up when she reached the 9th pod.
Wist, she called out, staring through the broken casing. Would you come here a minute?
Find something,
the Marine called back, picking his way carefully down from the top tier.
No. Just the opposite.
She waited until he landed on the floor beside her, and then she pointed.
Nothing.
Damn, he muttered, craning his neck to look. One of them got out?
I don't think so, Aaron said. There's no flesh or bone, but there's also no discoloration from the liquid on either the insides of the pod or the insides of the organic plumbing. I don't think there was ever anything here.
That's crazy. Diz's puzzled voice said in her earphone. All the pods were... I'm pretty sure they were all sealed.
They were, Tanya confirmed tightly. That was the first thing I checked after the battle. They all looked exactly alike.
So why was one empty? Diz asked.
And are we sure it was just one? Tanya added.
Let's find out, Wist said.
The survey was quick. The final number was...
6? Diz said, sounding floored. You're saying a full 10% of the pods were empty?
And were never occupied,
Aaron reminded him. Somehow that fact was the one that dug the deepest into her brain.
Or at least had been empty for a while, Wist added. Like Aaron said, no liquid residue.
But there was liquid in all of them, Tanya insisted. I looked. Maybe it just looked like there was, Aaron said. Or, no, wait. If the baby Psyalisks were being fed or otherwise supported by the liquid, it was probably mostly organics, or at least it had some complex molecule components. That's what would have charred and stained the pods when Diz started the fire.
So the empty pods could have just been filled with water? Whist asked.
That or something else simple and inorganic, Aaron said.
You're suggesting they were decoys, a new voice put in.
Aaron frowned. New. But she had a strong feeling she'd heard it before.
Excuse me? She asked. Who is this?
Emperor Valerian, the voice came again. I thought your discovery was important enough for Colonel Cruikshank to patch me into the conversation.
My apologies, Emperor,
Aaron stammered, feeling her face redden as she silently cursed herself. Preoccupied or not, she should have instantly recognized the Dominion leader's voice.
Never mind that, Valerian said. At least he was being gracious about it. I need to know whether the empty pods might have been decoys.
You mean decoys for us, Emperor? Whist asked. I suppose they could have been. But what would be the point? Who even knew we were coming here?
That is indeed the question, Valerian said.
Lieutenant Hawkman, what's the status of your team and resources?
We're good to go, Emperor, Diz assured him. What do you need us to do?
You have the locations of Dr. Weiland's focal points 2 and 3?
Yes, Emperor.
Good. I want you to go directly to focal point 3. If you find the same sort of pods there, we need a good, solid look and analysis of what's inside.
With all due respect, Emperor, there's every indication the pods are growing the things that attacked us, Whist pointed out.
I agree, Valerian said, his voice going grim. In which case, we will want to burn every one of them down to their component atoms. But the first step is to make sure we know precisely what we're dealing with, and to be sure that if we get them, we get all of them.
Understood, Emperor, Diz said. Whist, Aaron, back here on the double. We'll leave as soon as you're aboard.
5 minutes later, Aaron once again found herself being pressed into her seat as Diz blasted the dropship into the sky.
You all might as well settle in, Diz said as he reached altitude and leveled off. Unsuit if you want to, or not, your choice. Just remember that even at top speed, it'll be about a 7-hour flight. There are meal bars, juices, and some colas in the survival kit if anyone's hungry or thirsty. I think I saw some scalet jerky in there, too, if your jaw wants a challenge.
Maybe later, Whist said, peering at the map he'd pulled up on his display. You know point 2 is a hell of a lot closer than 3. Any idea why Valerian didn't send us there?
Yeah, Diz said grimly. We got our hourly data drop before I turned the Psyblock back on. It seems Hierarch Artanis has sent a force of his own to take a look at that one.
He paused, and Aaron saw his eyes flick to Olavu.
And, he added, they're under attack.